that's just what the model that we've changed. It doesn't mean that we're anti-city or anti-office or anything. It's just like people can do their work from home. So the city, there's so much other opportunity for us to think of it differently and to, you know, make it a bit more pleasant.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. In this podcast, you learn the secrets and systems world-class founders use to master their business, their body, and their brain. Today, we're chatting to Aidan O'Shea, the founder of Autonomy. Aidan has a pedigree when it comes to running world-class businesses, having been the MD and CEO of VoxPro, which sold a couple of years ago. He now gone out on his own, and we have a first ever on the podcast. This company was started just before COVID and is fully remote. Everything they do is fully remote. Their systems and how they operate is completely remote. So if you're looking for a playbook and how to make your business more efficient and more remote savvy, this is the podcast for you. But first, quick thank you to my partners. Thanks to my partner, Square. Everything your business needs, like payments, point of sale, e-commerce, inventory management, chatting endlessly about the weather? Well, you're on your own there. Square. Everything your business needs. Almost. Visit square.com. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from my Connick offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Connick offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Connick offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day. Bring your team. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Connick offices. One of the most frequent questions I get asked on this podcast is, where do I find a mentor? And I've never fully had the answer, but now I do. Introducing Mentors Work, a fully funded mentoring program designed to help your business thrive, brought to you by the Small Firms Association in partnership with Skillnet Ireland. Imagine having a series of one-to-one individual mentoring sessions, along with upskilling workshops to network with your peers and learn from experts, as well as a bespoke business plan. And the best part, it's at no cost to you. Join over 2,000 Irish SMEs and see how the award-winning Mentors Work program can help your business to thrive. Places are limited though, so apply today at mentorswork.ie. Program is fully funded until the end of 2023, so get your application in now.
Aidan, welcome to the pod.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
That was quite an abrupt start there. I realized I just leaned down and here we go.
Jump into it.
Pleasure to have you.
Yeah, great to be here.
Thanks for joining me. We already had a really interesting chat. You're definitely the first company I've had since COVID who have started since COVID and are fully remote.
Yep.
Talk to me. How did that happen?
I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing to be the first of anything, but so how did that happen? Yeah, it's a bit of a story. Well, look, if I go back into my own experience, I work in the outsourcing industry. It's business process outsourcing is the industry. So what we do, Autonomy is the company. We design, build and operate customer support operations for other businesses. So businesses who are growing their customer base, growing their business and need help managing their customers, need help with the technology, the people, the processes. We come in, we do it all for them and we can run it for them as well. So I'm 20 years in that industry. Another way of looking at it and calling it is it's contact center outsourcing, right? So, and if you think of that in the past, you know, lots of people in big buildings in the middle of big cities, population centers, because you need a lot of people. It's a service business. One of the challenges with that, and particularly in the last few years before COVID, was this war for talent. It's been really hard to get people, really hard to keep people. And when you're in cities like Dublin or Cork, or we were in the US and Eastern Europe and the Philippines, Everywhere we went, there was a Google, there was a Facebook, there was a TikTok who, whenever they ramped up, they just come in and they will take a whole load of your people. And so it was very competitive and very, again, as I said, hard to get and hard to keep people. We did look at, in the past, trying to do remote working pre-COVID, but a lot of our customers were against it. Like, they didn't think it would be safe, didn't think it would be secure. You can't trust people. They won't be productive. And I think it was about the third week of March that was kind of turned on its head. And it was proven that, well, people could work from home. They can be productive. They can be, you can trust them and they can be secure, you know, so it can work. So I had left the industry at this stage and I decided I was going to do something differently in a different industry. I guess my background was, I was the MD, I was the CEO. That was a role I'd played in a couple of different organizations. So I felt my skills were transferable. But I was taking some time off in around March 2020 and just kind of watching the world change at home, as we all were, and started to think that this remote working could really be a solution to a lot of the problems that we were seeing in the outsourcing world. And that's what we did. So our business is fully remote. It is effectively contact center outsourcing, but we have no contact centers. We have no buildings. We have no offices. Everybody is working from home. And I think in our industry, I don't know of others that do it that way. A lot of the existing players will do hybrid or a mix of both. We are 100% remote first. We have built and designed every process, every practice, everything we do to be remote, and it works and it can be done. And I thought, wow, we're a couple of years into it. It's still the early stages.
Still seems to be working.
Well, yeah, it is. It's evolving, but it can be done. It's, you know, so as you said, fully remote and started out of COVID. I wouldn't have done it. I never thought I was going to start my own business. Never thought I was going to start my own business in this industry, except for the conditions, I guess, that were created by COVID.
That's fascinating. And the preparation of years of experience meets timing, meets luck, and it all just gels together to that moment where you're like, okay. You said something interesting there. You never thought you were going to start your own business.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, I've worked with a lot of really good and really successful entrepreneurs who've had really built really strong businesses and had great exits. And I, in my head, had convinced myself that I'm really good at working with these people. And these people, entrepreneurs, let's say, can be difficult, right? And because they see things differently and they do things differently, and that's why they're successful. But I had a bit of a knack and a bit of a niche of working well with them, being able to maybe run the day-to-day while they were doing the visionary and the entrepreneurial stuff. And I suppose I'd conditioned myself to thinking that, like, I'm not one of them. I'm the doer underneath, you know, the operations guy, the day-to-day guy.
Where did that come from? Was that self-talk, or was that something you'd heard or you just adopted over the years?
I would say self-talk, yes. I think, yeah, you just get conditioned. You think, you believe, you know, like, again, some entrepreneurs are just, like, from the day they're born, they're going to do this and they're going to be like that. And they have the self-confidence and, That's not me. I didn't have that from day one. So I guess I just kind of, you know, after doing something for a long time, you kind of start to think that this is what I'm always going to do. And I was doing fine. It was good. I was happy, you know. But then the conditions changed again through COVID. That kind of, I suppose, it reframed my thinking. It created the opportunity. And yeah, so something was changing in the world. And
that's so interesting, though. I find it really, because I love this, and I think about it all the time, the kind of born versus made argument. And I think most entrepreneurs, definitely I sit there, and you identified you there as well, made. It's definitely made. I think it's 95% made and 5% born, the mavericks, the eccentrics. And there's a heavy skewing towards them because it's cool and it's sexy and it's fun, and we can list off Elon, etc.
But Richard Bransons of the world,
they're the 5%. And you know what, they could have probably been anything. Became entrepreneurs because that was just where they became. So I think it's really interesting. I'm fascinated by that whole thing of born versus made. That's why I was interested to dig into it with you. What what changed then? Was it COVID? Was it your time off? What was it that changed in you?
Again, there's no silver bullet answer. There's no one answer. It was a combination of the circumstances and conditions. I think it was really important that I had taken time off to figure out what I was going to do next. That was January, February 2020. I was skiing, cycling, traveling, came home in March, said, geez, I better settle down now.
Have a little mini gap here for yourself.
Yeah. And then it was like literally the middle of March that the world changed. And it did dramatically. And it's funny how we move on. But they were dark days. Like nobody knew what was happening tomorrow or, you know, next week or next year.
I think we have a PTSD about that because we don't really think about it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Like that's a shock. It's like a trauma. It's like a death in your life. That whole period, I think we've kind of glossed over it.
But I was lucky that I wasn't working, right? In a strange kind of way, that my brain was clear, my head was free. I was able to think, I was able to observe. I was able to kind of reach back into my own experience and maybe attach that to what is happening now and how could that apply to the future? And there was probably a bit of urgency as well in that, you know, even some conversations I was having about roles I may go after were now not on the table because those businesses mightn't exist in 2, 3, 4 months.
Okay. Know? Yeah.
So there's a little bit of urgency and like, fuck, you know, maybe you need to look after yourself here. You know? So again, it's just another one of the conditions that were conspiring, but it was really, I think COVID has changed the world of work. Like there's just no doubt. And we're not going back. It is not that's going to be the same. And I think we're 2 years into a 20, 30, 40, 50 year experiment. And people are looking for the answer to, okay, COVID's over, right? What is the answer to how we're going to work in the future? We just started figuring it out, you know? So, in our world, I knew that the work that we were doing could be done at home. You don't need to drag people into the middle of Dublin, you know, people who aren't necessarily paid big sums. They don't need to find rent and pay for rent in the middle of the city centre. They don't need to get 3 buses to get here. They can, you know, get up in the morning, drop their kids to school, do their job, collect their kids, and have a life. So that it was all about actually the employee experience. So it created the conditions to allow people to work from home, which meant they could have a bit of their life back. So, and in our business, if you can give that to the people, we will attract them. We'll find it easier to attract them. They will want to stay because they have a better life. They still have the job and the job that pays the same. But their life work interaction is an awful lot better than it was. So that, and it was kind of that employee experience and the benefit then that gives to our customers. So that was kind of the thinking behind it.
Yeah, you're the first person to articulate that so well, because I think a lot of people still don't know. They're either hoping that things go back the way they were, or they're kind of wishy-washing it. They're kind of going, well, sure, look, we're both, and they're just not sure. You're the first person. And I think it's really interesting there what you highlighted about you had the perspective of you were stepping away and you had that view of kind of the helicopter view of looking down going, oh, these things. And but often when you're in it, you hit the nail on the head there. Often when you're in it, you can't see it because you're focused on survival. You're just we just have to get quick ship laptops, ship headsets, do whatever.
Exactly.
So how have you approached building a fully remote company from the ground up?
Yeah, good question. Well, it's the things that you do in a fully remote business are similar to what you do in an office, right? In terms of, let's say, recruitment, onboarding, training, communications, right? Those processes are the same, but they're done completely differently. Right. So we redesigned every process for remote. So how we advertise our jobs, what we write in our job specs, the questions we ask in our interviews, the tests that we might do in an interview, the skills that we test, the training and how we deliver it, our day-to-day communications, our engagement model, the tools that we use, they're all different. And they're all designed specifically for remote. We didn't take things that we did in the office world and said, okay, let's just tinker with them and adjust them. We started from scratch. We designed fully and intentionally for remote.
I think that's a really interesting point though. I think people are doing exactly what you said there. They're just taking everything they've had in the office and going, same thing, same, but different.
Yeah. And like, I really do sympathize with, like, if you had a successful business and you've grown it and you know what you did to grow it, and, you know, you have a good business, a great culture, and it was based around an office, but now that doesn't exist. Why would you want to change that?
It's terrifying as well.
Yeah, it's change. It's really, really difficult, and the world is different. And I sympathize with employers, because employees have moved on faster than employers. Like, an employee who knows that they can get a job and have the flexibility to work from home and to look after their life as well as do their job, and they have lots of options. You know, so they're way out there in terms of what they want, and the employer is a little bit behind in catching up. Not every employer, obviously, but a lot of companies that are struggling with hybrid and going to continue to struggle with hybrid haven't made that mental leap, I think.
It's the analogy of I use it frequently for, you know, big companies and startups. The startup is the speedboat, the big company is the oil tanker.
Yeah.
If you're going to slow an oil tanker or change direction.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to take you an hour to get that 1 degree turn going, whereas a speedboat can just like crank right straight away and they're gone. Yeah. By the time the big oil tanker's turned, speedboat's in a different city.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
How do big companies do it then? I'm going to ask you to probably get out your crystal ball a bit. Like, how can they take the lessons learned from you, I guess, if people are learning or listening going, oh, he's describing me, you know, I feel seen, I feel attacked. Like, how do big companies take some of the adoptions that you've done and kind of apply them?
Yeah, and it's not necessarily big companies, because funnily enough, some of them will have the resources and the smarts and the time to have thought about this and invested in this, right? So like, you know, if you go to the famous big tech names, they're probably pretty good at this. But I'm probably more thinking, you know, businesses who aren't at that global stage.
More traditional.
Yeah, exactly. Who are really being disrupted and have always done things in a certain way, and aren't out there in the world. They may have an international business, but they don't have, you know, operations everywhere. So they're not getting all of this feedback and all this input. I think they're the ones that there's probably a large number of those in the middle, you know, not the small companies, but not the very big and very well resourced. There's probably a lot of those in the middle that, you know, again, are struggling with this. But like, but again, you know, we see companies that they say we're hybrid, right? And people are at home 3 days a week and they're in the office 2 days. That's probably the average, you know.
I mean, it seems
that's probably
to be,
the way it seems to be.
Monday, going. Friday at home, Tuesday, so Thursday office.
You know, I ask people, like, does that mean you're 60% remote? I mean, that's, you know, three days out of five. Or if you're four, is it 80%? Like, and that's pretty, you know, that's a bit of a shock to people that say, no, we're not. We're, you know, we prefer to be in the office, but people work from home a few days a week. You know, well, you're not really, you're more remote than you are in the office. So again, and you ask, have you redesigned, have you been intentional around your processes, your practices, your ways of doing things for how you engage a remote workforce? And don't know that they have.
So you started a blank slate, all new processes, new systems. How did you figure that out? Because obviously, you know, you had no legacy systems to deal with. So how did you figure out where even to start?
Oof, that's a good question. where do we start? We started everywhere. We look at, you know, our, again, it's a people business. It's people, process, and technology. It's a service business, so we need people. It's reliant on technology, or it doesn't exist. So technology is at the core of what we do. So, you know, we look at the employee journey. Like, well, where do they start? They start when they see a job spec, to an interview, to an onboarding, to a, you just work through the cycle and broke it down into processes and practices across there, and kind of flip them on their head and say, right, well, how do they need to be redesigned for remote? And similarly with our infrastructure, we like literally threw everything out and started again, and everything was new. Everything was in the cloud. But I mean, that's probably an easier piece, because, you know, all of the big providers are there already. They're the tools, the infrastructure, the technologies are there to do that.
What was the journey like for you? Because we touched on earlier about the kind of psychology of moving from CEO to founder. What was that, and what kind of surprised you about that transition for you?
Well, the first surprise was that I did it. I didn't
surprised yourself most of all.
Yeah, I mean, again, if I was talking to you, well, I wouldn't be talking to you 3 years ago because you wouldn't have had an interest because I wouldn't have been a founder. So that was probably the first surprise. And I suppose there's a kind of realization, even when you are a COO or an MD or whatever, there's always someone above. There's always that comfort blanket, that kind of protection or of the founder, you know, and that doesn't exist. So it, like, when you get out there and it's your business and you're up front, there's no safety blanket. And I think also, like, one realization is that your whole life is now encapsulated in what you do at work. That wasn't always evident. Nobody told me that.
Did that feel different?
It felt different. It feels different. It is still different.
Right.
It is still different today.
In what way? How do you feel it?
Well, everything you do, like you, whether it's your identity, your day to day, your weekends, it's not like you're never off. You never stop. It's not, oh, I'm working when I'm at the desk. It's not, I'm watching one of my kids' matches and I'm thinking about, oh God, how are we going to do this and what do we have to do next? And so it's all consuming. Yeah. And even, you know, we set up the business. We acquired a little business as well at the start. We invested in the business. Same time we bought a new house, we were building a new house, and you know, it was like,
you went for it.
Kind of running out.
You really did find yourself in that couple of months off.
And yes, actually, look, we talked to the bank, and the bank were, you work for yourself.
Oh, it's a big difference, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
But you used to do this, and you used to earn that, and you're not paying yourself the same. Yeah, and I was like, okay, don't even finish that sentence. So you do, like, it does kind of take over everything. Yeah. And again, we did it interestingly. And I say we, so there's my wife, Hillary, is co-founder as well. Because again, we were in COVID at home talking about this questioning, challenging each other. And
sounds like she'd no choice.
Well, or maybe I had no choice. but one thing just, it wasn't, again, there was no plan here. This was not the intention. We kind of, well, circumstances and the conditions that had changed. And so we ended up working together. So not only are we, like, did I start a business? We started a business. Not only are we working from home, I'm in an office here and she's like next door. And you know,
you really set the game to hard mode and just started playing.
So yeah. So you were asking, like, how are things different? They're pretty different.
Fundamentally different.
Yes.
Was Hillary involved in the old business as well? Or is this something new to her?
No, completely new. She's a commercial lawyer by trade. Which again, interestingly enough, I think is like, because I brought in some of the team that I'd worked with in the past, but then you kind of realize that, look, we're, you know what you're getting because you know the quality and the experience, but you're getting a similar thought process and experience as well. Whereas someone who knows nothing about the industry will question things, will challenge things, because again, the world is different. So we can't do it the way we did it, you know? So it's, you do need that diversity, you know?
I think that's a really interesting. You're the second person in 2 days to make that point. We had two great founders on yesterday and they said, because I was asking them, they're working in a very traditional industry, right, you know, safety. And I was like, you know, how did you guys get into that? And they're like, well, you know, it's easier to think outside the box when you've never been in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, it is. Yeah, so
there's a balance between, you know, I thought I'd move into a different industry, but then it struck me, my God, I've got 20 years of experience here and I really know this industry. Yeah. So there's value in that. But then there's got to be compensated with by some other kind of, again, challenge and questioning that makes sure you don't just keep doing what you've always done, because that ain't going to work.
I think that's an interesting factor you've just highlighted there with Hillary, and the fact that, so you talked about earlier, we're considering going into a new industry. But instead of doing that, you've put a new spin on the industry you're in, but brought in Hillary as like this kind of new injection of ideas and direction. So it's almost like changing industries, but you're keeping the core formula the same. You're just tweaking it slightly.
Yeah. I guess, is it a different business model? slightly. And but again, I think, like, have we figured it out? No, I think we need to keep adapting how we do things within our industry.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, the world is different. Even in our industry, like, you know, ChatGTP is like everybody's talking about it. Nobody knows what it does or what it's going to do or the impact it can have. Mm. But there's an awful lot of change, right? It is going to change things.
Yeah.
And then AI and technology in general. So you've got to, it's a bit of a no-brainer. You've got to keep evolving and changing it up.
And these industries, they arrive quickly. I always use VR as an example. Like, VR has been coming for the last 20 years.
Still waiting.
Yeah. Still waiting, right? You know, it might never come. It'll probably come in a different form in terms of for gaming or something. I just see that as totally logical for gaming. Yeah. If I can play Call of Duty on a VR headset and it's totally immersive, I'm in.
Yeah.
Do I want to sit here and have this with you with VR goggles and you and Cork and me here? Probably not so much.
Yeah.
You know, the avatars and the Microsoft Paint style hands we'd have. Probably not so much, but somewhere in the middle, you know, you see the people using it today, you know, remote surgery and stuff like that now. Yeah. You know, technology comes in all different ways and not always in the way that we think. So I think there's been a lot of fear mongering about AI and, the jobs. You know. Like the narrative around that is just toxic because oh, beware the boogeyman. Yeah. He's coming to take your jobs.
Yeah.
Like that's as old, like that dog whistling is as old as time, you know, trying to whip up fear in people to either backlash against an industry. How do you see AI playing a part in your industry?
Well, it's already playing a part, and it has been for a long time. It's not new. Of course, it's evolving and getting more advanced. But for years and years and years, there's been talk of customer support roles are going to be automated. And what I think is going to happen, and it's probably happening already, is the easy stuff is going to go away.
Yeah.
That the machines and the bots are going to take care of simple, basic customer queries, right? And the role actually of someone in customer support is becoming a lot more complex because the easy stuff is gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, help me with the more difficult issues. So, and there is a digital transformation that companies need to go through. But there's a whole lot of stuff that you have to have figured out as well before you can automate it. Like, do you know everything about your product? Are you able to write down every use case, every example, every challenge someone has? No, you're not. Like, you know, so the technology always needs help.
Yes.
From people, you know, even as it evolves. So, so to answer your question, it's already playing a role. There's already, like, we have tools with AI built into it that make things easier and make things faster, and they will continue to evolve. But there's always going to be a role for people.
It'll free people up. It'll free people up, exactly like you said, up the value chain.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to do more higher skilled work, to be able to do more complex work, it will get rid of some jobs, mundane jobs, but they will repurpose themselves into probably higher up the value chain then to do better and probably more fulfilling things as well. That's the thing that's not talked about in terms of all this stuff's so dull and mundane, pulling data from databases and putting it here. And some of the stuff you do yourself, you find you're creating reports, you're going,
it's great.
A lot of the stuff we get is dumb information.
Let the AI do it. You know?
Yeah, you get dumb stuff. You're kind of going, I just need to now create a tab and I need to move it over here. And you're just dragging and dropping. And you're like, this makes no sense. You're spending hours creating reports. I do it a lot for the podcast in terms of stats and figures and stuff.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to be doing it. Like, you have to do it.
Yep.
But I think the internet is like, whatever you want to call it, Web3 was all hyped up last year. But like, there is an evolution of like, dumb internet to smart internet.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just getting information, you're getting information with context.
Yeah.
I think that for AI as well, the context is now coming with it, going, okay, Gary, yesterday you asked about this. Now tying that back in, here's today's figures.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. So, I mean, look, there's a whole array of applications and benefits, you know, but I wouldn't be as extreme. Maybe a little bit cynical around all of the talk of like, oh God, you know, the world is going to be transformed in the morning because of ChatGPT. And I don't subscribe to it.
I don't either. I'm a rational optimist. Like, stuff takes time.
Yeah.
People are, you talked about it already in terms of companies just been stuck in their ways going, oh, this is how we've always done it. You know, we've always had an office. We've always used this system. We've always had 10 meetings a day. You know, it's hard. And it's companies like you who just go blank slate, off we go. Here's the thing. What's been the most challenging? It's probably 100. What's been the most challenging moment of the last 2 years? Picking one will be the hard part as a founder. That? Picking one is the hard part as the founder.
Yeah. I guess it's probably, you know, the uncertainty of where you're going. And actually, I remember I read, again, like your topic of entrepreneurship, someone posted on LinkedIn, and it was Pat Phelan commented on it, that what is an entrepreneur? And someone commented that it's when you've got this feeling in your stomach that never goes away. And Pat Phelan was, I'm with you there, you know. And I kind of like have a bit of that. There's always a bit of nervousness and a bit of probably anxiety, like in a positive way, you would hope, around, Jesus, what have we done? Where are we going? Like, you know, what's our ideal customer? What markets should we be in? Have we got enough money? Like, you know, have we got the right people? So that's not one thing, but it's kind of that all together.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
It's probably.
But then you've that, like that opportunity thing as well.
Well,
you've
there's an excitement there as well. Yeah there
they is. Balance themselves off. They kind of ebb and flow depending on the morning, depending on the day.
Probably more the evening. Mornings are good.
At night when the darkness comes, like, so do the thoughts.
There's an excitement. It's kind of a privilege as well to be able to do your own thing and to
exactly
create something and develop something that some people want to be a part of and that some customers will pay you for what you do. That's really great, you know. And every time you win a new customer, for me, that is the biggest buzz. Or when someone joins the business. And when you hear positive feedback about how we do things and the culture, and that's what it's about, you know, that
sense of freedom. I think that can't be underestimated. And sometimes people lose sight of it because they create a prison of their own making.
Yeah.
To create all these kind of structures and systems and over-reliance. The most common thing you see with like new founders is, I'll just do it myself. I'll just do it myself.
Yeah.
How have you managed kind of the transition? Probably as a CEO, you probably already have these systems and structures, but how have you kind of managed to kind of go into the founder role and not get consumed by it all?
But that's an easy one. By having a really good team from the start. No, we were able to do that, right?
Yeah.
Not every early stage business might be able to do that, but, and that was probably like, so again, we're all kind of conditioned or victims of our past. So I was used to having a good team and I kind of felt I needed to have a good team. Now, I kind of didn't figure out the economics of that because good teams are expensive as well, you know. But anyway, we figured it out as we went along. But one of the first things I did was bring in some really good people, like who could look after whether it's the HR side or the IT side or whatever. And I don't have to, I don't want to worry about, well, you do worry about it, but you don't have to be involved, you know?
Yeah.
So you can rise above it then, you know, if you have a good team. And I know even talking to some people in Enterprise Ireland who work with like a lot of, let's say, high potential startups, they say that that's one thing that a lot of startups don't do enough of early enough, is bring in really good people who can take care of so many challenges, problems, opportunities, you know? That allow you to drive on.
That's the most common mistake you see. But it comes back to something you said earlier. Startups get caught between the two stools of the talent war. They're a startup. Maybe they're making some sales. They're trying to get a bit of traction.
Yeah.
Now they're like, oh, we need a head of IT. Everyone's been sucked up by big tech firms.
Yeah.
Whereas now there's starting to be a little shift in terms of where they can get talent from. Have you seen this? Have you seen kind of a change into how you attract talent, where you attract talent?
Well, it's probably fundamental to our business model. Like, so yes, like one of the other first things I did when we set up was say, right, we need to get out of Ireland. And don't mean that in a bad way, but I mean, both from a business development point of view, but also from a talent and talent sourcing and talent development point of view. Ireland has had a great run. But there's tons of jobs, you know, and people have a lot of choice, and that drives costs, and I think it impacts loyalty and retention as well. And there are there's a bigger world out there, and I think again with remote working, you can find talents, you can hire from a much wider talent pool. That's what we do. So we are definitely hiring more outside of Ireland than we are in Ireland, you know. So, and we're finding the talent out there.
Where do you find it? Because that's the big thing. I hear this all the time. I can't find talent. They can't find it, or then they can't retain it. What are your kind of guiding principles about finding good talent?
I guess it's knowing what you want is probably the first thing. It might sound obvious, but it's not always. I mean, everybody has, anyone who's ever hired has made mistakes, right? So, and probably will again. But being really clear on what you want. Like, again, when we hire people into our business, like, and remember, so we're remote first. That's the way we work. We don't have offices. We do get together. We do meet face to face, but we are never going back to an office. Like, so we people need to know that, like, and they need to realize that, and they need to want that. And that needs to be good for them and good for how they live their life, you know? So, and that's what I mean by really, really knowing what we want. So that people are clear on, this is going to be our way of doing things. This is our culture. This is, you know, not really going to change. And that's before you talk about skills, or whether it's an IT or a HR or, you know, whatever you're looking for. But then look, I think it's, you know, getting clear on, again, what are the cultural requirements, but, and I don't like saying cultural fit either, because I think there's a bit of people, you know, you don't want everyone to be the same, but like, there is a type of person, you know, that will get on with everyone else, that will like working in the environment that we've created. Still haven't spoken about the skills. So there's a lot of other things to figure out first.
Yeah.
There's probably plenty of people out there who have the skills.
That's it, you know? Right?
So like, I think it's important to get all the other things, the softer things, right first. But definitely, again, the world has changed. I mean, you can hire talent anywhere. So, you know, you don't have to. But where companies are challenged again is like, if you say, oh, well, we have to be in the office a day a week. But if you're in Dublin and we have to be in the office a day a week, well, we're hiring in Dublin.
Yeah.
And we are. We're competing with Google and Facebook and TikTok again. So, again, it's understanding what are you willing to do, and how are you stretching yourself and stretching your model.
Do you think a lot of companies that set up will just do what you've done, remote first, remote only, in terms of, this is how we are? Because exactly what you alluded to there, you know, you're a little bit in and a little bit out. Like, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You either are or you aren't. So like, it's the same with this. If you're forcing people into the office one day a week, well, then they can't live in Killarney. Well, they can, but it's going to be an absolute nightmare for them once a week. And I know people doing it now. And they're you know, but I going way back to what something you said about employees got it straight away.
Yeah.
I was amazed. Like, within a month or two, friends of mine were like, yeah, leaving Dublin, going to Mayo, leaving Dublin, going to Marbella, leaving Dublin, going to Italy, leaving Dublin, going here. We'll see what happens. They never came back.
They're not coming back
because the genie's out of the bottle here in this case, in terms of, well, I was earning good money, say, in Dublin. Now I'm earning the same money, but it's great money because I now live somewhere that's half the cost.
Exactly. And that's, put a price on that.
Yeah. And it's a generational thing as well, in terms of, in your 20s, you want to be in the city. You want to be going out. You want to be doing all this crack.
Yeah,
in your
30s
and 40s.
Exactly.
Kids, wife, house, schools, all that stuff becomes far more important in terms of a balance of life, in terms of how do you live your life.
And I think as there are more jobs available, you know, it's not all about the job, because I can leave that job and I can do a different one. It's more about the life and the impact on my life. So, but you asked, your question was, will more companies set up remote first? To me, the answer is yes, and they already are. Like, you know, we work with some US companies, and like, when you get into remote first companies, there's different ways and different extremes. Like, so one of our customers they're async first, right? So they they will encourage their people to work in written form first.
Okay. When you say async, what does that mean for people that aren't working in
industry? Async is like, so we're talking live. Async is I email you and 8 hours later you come back with a response because you could be working in a different time zone. Or so it's more about written, more about, doesn't matter what time zone, we're not in the same room, we're not conversing. Now, we, like, so it could be, you know, written first, then it could be a Teams second. Let's say, okay, where there is an interaction, could be the second form of communication. And third, it could be, okay, we need to get together and do a brainstorming. So let's go and meet or something like that, you know? So one of our customers, they're pretty extreme on the, like we were saying, yeah, let's have a meeting about that. And they're, no, send me some questions and I'll send you the answers. And funnily enough, they're in the US on the West Coast. We'd send the emails and lo and behold, there in the morning, the answers were there. And it was, geez, we didn't need to meet, you know?
I love that. I'm a big fan of that.
On. Yeah.
Big fan of that.
When we needed to meet, we met, you know? And when we needed to talk, we talked. But so they're already out there. You know, you asked, will more companies set up like this? They already are. And I think in fairness, a lot of earlier stage tech companies will just adapt to that way of working, but also because they can't get the talent, they're going to go remote.
Yeah.
They're not going to compete with Google in Dublin city center. Why would you do that? You know,
so you've made a beautiful point there about the async first, because there's nuance and nuance and nuance. There's remote and then there's async remote.
Yeah.
That's the first time has been brought up.
We talk about remote first. We're just scratching the surface.
Yeah, you really are.
Multiple models of how, and evolutions. And as I said, I think we're 2 years into maybe a 50-year experiment. So
I, at my core, there's very few things you can nail your colors to the mast on. At my core, I believe the exact same. I think this, we talked about, like, I think it's going to have the same effect as the internet, the industrial revolution, factories. I think it's going to have the same effect in the workforce. The thing is, we just don't know, right? We don't know yet.
Yeah.
But there are companies like you and like the Async First companies who are going, we don't know, but we're going to try to figure it out pretty bloody fast. Because if we do, we will be so far ahead of everybody. Mm. The Async First, Connor Murphy, he founded Datahug and now he's the founder of Bridge.
Right.
Super intelligent guy. His framework for this is Loom, Zoom, Room.
Yeah.
And you know when someone says something to you, you're like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. Loom at first, because you can give the context of, this is what I'm working on. This is what I'm thinking. Here's the mock-up I did. Let me know what you think. I'm thinking these colors, blah, 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 blah. He ships it off to the designer, like you said, in the West Coast of LA. They're like, yeah, cool. Overnight, you wake up and it's like magic.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, like when the Amazon man turns up, I still get a buzz. Every single time the Amazon guy turns up, I'm like, God, it's like our superpowers.
Put the turkey in the oven on Christmas Eve at 100 degrees and it's done in the morning when you get up. It's like, Jesus, great.
There's certain things, I still get fascinated by certain things.
Loom one is interesting. I was talking to someone in our team yesterday about it, and they were saying a lot of the, again, we do a lot of training, obviously, you know, how we get up to speed with understanding our customer's business. And Loom was thrown out there a lot. And again, they say sync company that we were working with, they used it as well. But if you think about it, like video, like, so instead of reading a process or an SOP or whatever, there was this video where it was talked through and it was so much easier, so easier to engage with. It was done once, you know, and reshared and repeated. So there are lots of tools, and this comes back to changing how you do your business, looking at the tools you use. It's not just all email or even Slack or whatever. There's lots of other really nice tools out there that help remote working.
And it's the speed as well. The other two things I fundamentally have kind of come to believe over the last couple of years is leverage and distribution will become phenomenally important. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes you sit down to write an email, you're 20 minutes at it.
Yeah.
You're chipping away and you're editing and I'll get my wife to come in and read it. Does that sound okay? Is the context there? Especially when you're dealing with third parties. They don't know me.
Yeah.
They don't want to have a call. They can't kind of go, how's it going? You know, it's grand. This isn't a big problem. I just wanted to go back to you. So you're kind of going, is the context there? Whereas I think video is just lovely, but easy video, because video is quite hard. We're sitting here. Yeah. We've got Ben handling all the video.
Yeah.
It's hard to do at a high level.
Yeah.
But the likes of, for stuff like that, Loom, you made a brilliant point there about, especially training someone. If you're going to get 10 people in a room to train them, got to get a trainer there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
The cost. I love that tweet that went viral a few weeks ago about the cost of meetings. Mm. It was put in about, you know, if everyone does a meeting and everyone's getting paid, whatever, 80 grand a year, whatever it was, they're like, well, that meeting cost you 850 euro.
Yep.
Training, 10x that. Or for a day. Mm. And you've got to go to a hotel. You got to get everyone there. Yep. Whereas with the looms, you sit down, you're going to go, right, I'm going to do this training today, spend 2 hours crafting it. It can be consumed once or a million times. That's what I love about this podcast. We sit down, we have this really good chat. It can be listened to 10 times or 10 million times.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the tools, there's a perfect storm though, isn't there, of technology coming at the right time as well. You know, like you made the point at the very start about companies probably would never have adopted this remote work. Mm. Or if they did, it'd be 20 years, 30 years, 50 years down the line.
The acceleration of COVID, you know, that created the impetus for it.
What knock-on effects do you think this will have in the world in terms of we're sitting here in Dublin City Centre, we're looking out, it's very quiet. Mm. It's super quiet. Like there's no traffic. There's the odd person strolling by. You know, it's a Thursday in April. Like what effects do you think remote work will have on cities?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think it already is. Right? I mean, cities are quieter. They're still, well, it's probably stalled a bit now, but there has been huge development of office blocks and I don't know what for now, that they're going to have to be repurposed. I think, you know, planning and governments have a big role to play here. I know in Ireland, we don't like to kind of give any credit to developers, but why should they build or develop, let's say, apartments, which we need, when like they can't actually do it viably or economically, you know? So something's got to change, you know, and it ain't going to happen on its own. I think people still want the cities. People still want to come in and they want to like enjoy themselves and they want to interact and they want to see a buzz and, you know, they want to go to matches. And so I love coming to Dublin. So it is like everything else, it will evolve, but it's going to be different. Mm. It already is. But again, we're at the early stages of I think a long transformation.
Mm, I think you're right. Like we're social creatures. Like, I love coming in the city because there's a buzz. I don't want to be in here every day.
Yeah.
You know, I love retreating
here, you know?
See, that's the thing. You don't really.
You don't have to. Why do you, you know? And that's what the model that we've changed. It doesn't mean that we're anti-city or anti-office or anything. It's just like people can do their work from home. So the city, there's so much other opportunity for us to think of it differently and to, you know, make it a bit more pleasant.
It's fascinating. I love thinking about it. How do you recreate? We talked about this a little bit over coffee. How do you recreate this feeling of being in a room with someone and getting that kind of energy, and I can get to know you a little bit better and I can see what you mean and your context is there? How, as a remote first company, are you thinking about that?
Yeah, a good question and a difficult question. And like, let's not fool ourselves into thinking that we can recreate it, because that's different. It's different, right? When you meet people face to face, it is different, right? So now we do meet, and I think most remote companies do, you know, let's say we try and meet our leadership team once a month and do a business review and a look forward, you know, we try and do quarterly get-togethers or night outs. We're still human as well, you know, so those things are still important. But, you know, I think what you're talking about is how do you develop culture, right? So, and that isn't all about, you know, well, we were hanging around the canteen or we went for coffee together, or you can go for coffee, but you can do it over a Teams. It's not the same thing. We're not saying it is, right? But you've got to be, the word we use is intentional around creating opportunities for people to communicate and probably more importantly, to connect. What's important to them? It's not what are you doing in your 9-to-5 work or job? It's like, what are you doing outside of work? You know, we do, you know, exercise challenges, or we do fundraising things that, you know, you introduce a kind of a mileage calculator or a competition, and, you know, bringing in that element of competition always creates a bit of excitement and a bit of energy. And like, so you're connecting people in through different things and different ways outside of work. It's just, we're not in the same building, you know, but I think, like, again, you need to plan, you need to be intentional, you need to make it happen, because it won't otherwise. Whereas when people are in a building, things kind of happen.
Yeah, there's that serendipity effect, right?
Yeah.
We just happen to go down for coffee together and you just happen to talk about football. Yeah. I love football too. You know, and you go into a deeper level, start playing fives or whatever together. There's that deeper level. I like that. Intentional. Yeah. So you're intentional about it.
And I think also when, like, you know, I've worked in plenty of offices where there's been loads of people, you know, and they had swings and slides and good canteens. But were the people happy?
I often think about this. Like, it's wild.
Were they? It was still the same things. They were, like, we certainly had people who were unhappy because, and not everyone, but some people, because, again, they were living in the city centre. They had to commute. They had to get two or three buses. Like, they were 8 or 9 hours at work, but it was a 12-hour day. And, like, my life is not good because of that. Mm. So do I care about a swing or a slide or a good canteen?
You never get to go on the swing and the slide anyway because you're under such pressure.
And it was put in first and I never looked at it again. And I don't think anyone ever did.
The slide of sadness because, you know, you can't go on it.
The pool table that goes like that because, you know, it's been never touched in such a long time with a foosball table. But that's not culture. They're gimmicks. They look good
in the photography for the company. They look like, oh, look at all the cool toys we have.
Yeah, but they're really not important to people.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what, like, our way of working is more about employee experience. And it's not even employee, it's life experience, which you also happen to work. You know,
yeah,
and the work isn't getting in the way of how you live your life.
I was chatting to someone who works in the talent management space last night, and he was talking about they'd done 6 interviews this week, and first question, every single interview was not about pay, it's not about anything.
How many days a week in the office or flexibility?
Is this remote? Number one,
right?
And he was saying we're hiring for high level jobs here. This was not like, you know, this is not just a very entry-level job. These were high-level jobs. First question, what's some of the money? Is this remote? Mm. That says everything, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think, as I said earlier, employees, people have moved on very fast. Businesses are only, you know, trying to figure it out, so they're catching up.
Mm. You know, if COVID was a 6-week thing, I think we'd be having a very different conversation here.
Yeah.
But the fact it went 6 months, a year, 18 months, 2 years. You know,
things were embedded.
You can't unsee what you've seen.
Yeah.
You can't get a taste of the good life and then go back to the zoo. Yeah. You know, it's wild. Like it's a phenomenally interesting space.
Yeah.
How do you kind of look after yourself then? As a CEO, I'm sure that was an extremely pressurized job. I like to phrase kind of the podcast is about the business, the brain and the body, because the three together, I think, are fundamentally important. And this is something I've realized over COVID that, you know, a lot of us were out of whack in terms of, oh, I'm just, you know, working 12-hour days, 16-hour days. This is a great thing, blah, blah, you're so good. Whereas now the business, brain, the body, you're so connected.
Mm.
To the good entrepreneurs I speak to, and generally it comes with experience. So how have you learned to kind of look after yourself?
Yeah.
As a CEO and now as a founder, and has it changed?
Yeah. Yes. And I think like my work day has changed. Like, so I've 4 kids, 16 down to 10 as well. So like we've work and kids and not a whole lot else, you know.
2 full-time jobs.
It's busy. But I find myself starting earlier and finishing later and probably taking time in the middle of the day.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, like, for example, all the kids are in sport, so I might be at a match at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon or something, or, you know, there's lifts or collects or drops. We might go home and have our dinner, and we might do 2 hours after, you know.
Yeah.
In the past, you'd have been in an office, so you wouldn't have got home till 9 or 10 o'clock if you were doing that, you know. So, I don't mind. I like that. There's freedom around that.
Yeah.
I mean, the business is called autonomy for a reason, I think. But there is freedom around that, and that you've more control.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've got customers and things get in the way of all that, but that's fine. You can manage that.
Yeah.
Having that freedom and that ability, the freedom to choose, is a de-stressor for me. Like being able to do other things that are going on in your life, like, you know, whether it's, you know, looking after the kids or driving them around or whatever. It sounds very unpleasant, but you know, there's lots of other good things to do. I think you have to be selfish. Like, you have to be self, like, I try to go to the gym in the morning. Well, a few days a week, I like to cycle, you know, whether that's at the weekend or maybe at a lunchtime or something. You have to carve out time. Mm. You have to. And I know that there's this cliche around working in and working on the business. Mm. You have to get up. You have to get up over it and look down. Right at the moment, I'm kind of working in something that has dragged me in, and I'm just way less effective, more stressed, less tolerant, less everything. Because I'm busier and, you know, busier and just doing stuff as opposed to, like, you know, trying to strategize and look at where are we going? Are we doing the right things?
So interesting. You've got the self-awareness of that, though. A lot of people don't have that self-awareness, though, of being able to step back and go, okay, I know I'm in it too much. Generally, people can't see that until it's too late. How did you develop that self-awareness?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it was probably because, you know, I said to you earlier, we have a good team and a strong team. Mm. So I've been lucky enough in that I have been able to kind of let them off and support them and look at other things. But I could kind of see as I got dragged into something that wasn't happening. I don't know how to answer your question, but I definitely have noticed you get more stressed, you get more busy, and you're just not doing your job. Mm. Like, the job of the CEO or founder, whatever you want to call it, is not to be doing that. Mm. It's inevitable. Like, you've got to do it at sometimes, but...
Everything goes in seasons, right? You have seasons where you're just flat to the mat, and that's okay too.
And I can see, I'm going to be getting out of this soon enough, and I can see this isn't forever.
Yeah.
So, and it always helps if people outside as well, you know, to talk to and challenge and throw darts, you know.
No, it hasn't been hard. Has it been a challenge?
Of course it has.
To kind of start to work, you know, you've gone from an office and then you've gone from working as CEO to a founder to working with your partner. There's a lot of change there. Mm. How have you kind of like kept it all kind of like segmented, I suppose, fragmented? Because often I ask partners who work together, live together, how have you kept that kind of professional or personal relationship healthy and with boundaries? I suppose the boundary question is where I'm trying to drive at here. Eventually, I'm thinking out loud. How have you kept those boundaries between the personal and the professional?
I could make up an answer here now, or we could tell you the truth.
That's a safe space. You could tell us the truth. No one's listening.
It's very hard. I would say we probably haven't been great at it. Yeah. Because it's an early stage growing business and you're all in, you know.
You are, you have to.
Again, you need to be disciplined. And like, there are times like, can we just please not talk about it, you know? But it's difficult. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And you kind of look forward to the time when, which I don't know, will it ever happen, but where you might be less busy or there might be more of the team or the business is in a different space. But look, that's what you're working towards, you know? And again, that's the upside. That's the opportunity.
Going to hit you another hard question here. I've hit you with one, now I'm going to hit you another one. What is definition of success for you with autonomy? What will success look like?
It's a bigger business with more customers and more places around the world, with a lot of people that have come and joined and want to stay, and more people who want to join, because then we'll have built something. Because to succeed at that and to have that, you'll have got a great culture, you'll have got a good business. It's going to have to evolve from where it is now, because again, as I've said a few times, the world is changing, so our business model needs to continue to change. But I think in a few years' time, if you're looking in and seeing, again, we're in multiple countries, but customers coming from multiple places, who've been with us for a long time and similarly people, that's success, you know? And then of course, then there will be a value in that, because you'll have created something of value. Mm. But I think first and foremost, you got to achieve that stuff. Like it's not about like, okay, I want to get to a value of X, or I want to create something of value. Or if you create it with all of the right things in place, it will be valuable.
Mm, I love talking to founders who've extensive experience and that they've gone through, like you did with your previous company. You know, you've seen what happens if you put the right environments in place, and you've kind of seen, we talked about over coffee, playbooks.
Yeah.
The power of a playbook is huge. Mm. You can't keep reinventing the wheel every week. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
How do you apply playbooks to your business?
It's a service to other companies. So we've got to get in and understand other companies and their business. And it could be in any sector, in any industry, in any location. So we need our playbook. We have experience, so we know what we're looking for. There are patterns. There are ways of doing things. There are companies consistently make the same mistakes. So you kind of know what you're looking for. You know the questions you're asking. There is a playbook. If you put a medical analogy, there's a diagnosis of what's going on, and there's a treatment for it then as well. But it's not the first time you've done it.
Yeah. A lot of the good companies I talk to have, a lot of them are starting to use Notion. It's like this is where it lives. Everything, if we do it more than once, and I used to have this thing as well, and the other business I used to run, if it's questions asked more than once, document it. Because if it's asked more than once, it's going to be asked again. It's going to be asked again. It kind of goes back to the Loom Zoom Room thing.
If
it's been asked again, let's not keep figuring it out. Let's just document it once. And then a lot of people are using Notion as like a home base.
Yeah.
Every new employee into Notion. Yeah. All the videos are there. All the home base is there. You start there and you go through, and that's kind of like part of your onboarding. It's it's really interesting, that whole kind of space of new companies and the async. That's such a big lesson. I'm still thinking about that part, because all this stuff seems obvious when you talk about it out loud. That's why I love having conversations with people like yourself, because there's nuance on nuance, you know, remote, hybrid. Yeah. But how do you work?
We thought we were a bit different by being remote first. And then we came across this company who taught us like, no, sorry, there's another way of doing it.
Yeah.
Another extreme, you know, another notch up.
Comes back to the balance piece again, doesn't it? Comes back to how you're balancing your life. You know, you're saying there about having the freedom during the day to take two chunks out. Beautiful. Like it comes back to intentional. You're intentional about how you want to live, how you want to build your business. I think there's this great freedom now of like, kind of the rules are off, right? The rules have been suspended.
I think people have, and maybe again, was this COVID, or people have figured out that life is short. And, but again, there are lots of jobs out there. So like the job piece, it isn't necessarily that special that people will stay in a difficult or a job that they're unhappy in.
Well, if you live in Nina, I know Nina well. There's one or two companies, right?
Yeah.
Which one are you going to work for? Yeah. If you want to stay in a good job in Nina, one or two companies, or you're going to go to Limerick, or you're going to go to Galway to Push. Oh, that's your choice.
Yeah.
Whereas now, onto Indeed.
Yeah.
Search remote work. Cool. I've got Wi-Fi.
Yeah, but I think again, we talked about conditions and circumstances of what's going on in the world and the environment, and like in Ireland, we're at what, 3 or 4% unemployment, so it's full employment. Yeah. You know, so that is a condition that creates a change. Like in the past, it was probably accepted that jobs are difficult and there's going to be stress, and you've got to put up with a lot of crap, but people, certainly a younger generation, they're just not going to do that anymore,
I think companies like yourself, if you've figured out the trick early.
Well, yeah, look, yes and no. Like, it's still a hard thing to do.
Yeah, it's an evolution.
There's a theory and there's the reality and the practice. Like, it's not, we haven't figured everything out. And it's something you got to work on.
But you're on the road, though. You're like you said, you have to know what you want. It goes back to what you said there about hiring good people. You have to know what you want. You know exactly what you want. You know exactly the type of company you're building. You know the type of people you're bringing. And then that attracts people that are on your mission. They're going, fully remote. Yeah, I know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Is there a book you'd recommend to people? It can be something that's made an impact on you personally or professionally.
There's one that I'm reading now. I got it for Christmas. I'm a very slow reader.
I was going to say, come on, Ed, now speed it up.
It's like every time I pick up a book and read it. it's Bono's book.
Okay.
It's an autobiography, right? So it charts their life from when he was a teenager in Dublin through to where they are today. He's an entrepreneur. If you could get him in, I would talk.
You can intro me after this.
Yeah, yeah. No problem. Yeah, I have them in my phone there.
I'll send them an async Zoom or Loom, both of us after this.
Yeah, exactly. But to me, like if you, I'm probably a bit older than you as well, but back in like, you know, 80s and 90s, when Ireland was a different place, these guys were out there taking over the world.
It's true, yeah.
You know, they were the first kind of, and I even remember, like, you know, Italian 90 and things like that. Ireland had never done anything in the world. You know, started a few rows and had a few arguments maybe with our neighbors, but these guys were out there kind of conquering the world, and that was inspiring. It just so happened that his music is what they do. But then as you read through his book, you know, he's set up foundations.
They've made a lot of smart investments.
Him and
The Edge have both gone on and done.
But their charitable work as well. Like they have set up organizations. They've founded many organizations, you know. And they didn't need to, you know. So I just thought it was really interesting. And he talks a lot about, you know, challenges that they have in moving people, whether it's politicians, from, you know, one mindset into another, and how do you do that, and how do you shift people, and how do you get people on board, and it's the same as, you know, how do you start a business and get people on board and sell
it's
it to
all
your
sales
customers.
Exactly. It's all sales. You're selling an idea.
A traveling door-to-door salesman.
Yeah.
Bono calls himself one, you know, so selling is important. But anyway, so I thought that it is an interesting book.
Brilliant.
From that perspective.
Perfect. Yeah. Where can people learn a little bit more about autonomy and yourself?
Well, we have a website. I think probably like most founders, you're never going to be happy with your website because it's nearly always out of date, right? If people are interested in what I'm talking about, I'd love if they reach out personally to me.
Okay. Where can they do that?
LinkedIn is probably an obvious place.
Perfect.
I think there's... You never have a wasteful conversation, you know. There's always something interesting comes of it. And
perfect. The LinkedIn's powerful. I think it's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
We connected there originally. I think it's really, really powerful. It's not really used enough. And it's a kind of a direct link. I think a lot of stuff gets lost by email and other social channels are too noisy or not active anymore. I think LinkedIn is the one.
Yeah.
If you're trying to connect with business people, I think LinkedIn is still brilliant.
Yeah.
Aiden, thank you so much. That was an absolute
Gary,
pleasure.
Yeah. Really
thank
enjoyed
you so
it.
Much.
Yeah. Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed that pod today. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, or Apple, click like, hit subscribe, and I'll see you in the next one.